The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. This is Brad McDonald, and it's good to be back with you on this Friday afternoon. Looking forward to the weekend, I'm sure. If you'd like to contact us, you know our email address, kpcg.fm, kpcg.fm. So if you'd like to get into contact with thetrumpet.com or Stephen Flurry or myself, go ahead and send an email to that address. We'd love to hear from you. Well, you probably are aware. If not, you will be after today's program. But today is a big day here in the United Kingdom. Today is a big day for the European Union. Today is a big day for Prime Minister David Cameron. Today is a big day for the future of Britain's relationship with the European Union. Today, I thought I would just bring you up to speed on this week's events here in Europe, and specifically on this issue of Britain's relationship with the European Union. I thought I would begin the program today with what is just an incredible quote. This is an observation that is becoming more and more significant with every passing day. In many ways, it's a fulfilled prophecy. And I'm going to read this quote, and it's a prophecy that is being fulfilled right at this very moment, this very hour in Europe, in Brussels in particular. Now, as you can guess, the source of this quote is Mr. Herbert Armstrong. And this is what he wrote in The Plain Truth in March, or the March 1973 issue of The Plain Truth. So what's that? 41 years ago. Here's what Mr. Armstrong said 41 years ago about Britain and its relationship with the European Union. He said, Britain is going to look back on Monday, January 1st, 1973, in all probability as a most tragically historic date, a date fraught with ominous potentialities. For that date marked the United Kingdom's entry into the European community. Now, if I had the opportunity to have lunch with David Cameron at this very moment, in fact, I think at this very moment he was having a working lunch with European Union leaders, but if I was able to invite Prime Minister Cameron into this room right now, and if I was to ask him about Britain's relationship with the EU, I think he would shake his head, he'd throw up his arms, and he would look back on January the 1st, 1973, as a date that has proven to be tragically historic. Prime Minister Cameron was in negotiations or meetings with European leaders until 5 o'clock this morning. All day yesterday, all night last night, he's been in negotiations with the EU. Right now, on this subject of the European Union and Britain's relationship with the EU, there is just an enormous amount of exasperation and tension and frustration and anger and hostility. Prime Minister Cameron, now he wants Britain to remain a member of the European Union. He wants Britain to stay in the EU, but to stay in on its own renegotiated terms. But if you were to ask Prime Minister Cameron, if you were to ask nearly all the British politicians and officials who've been involved with the European Union, if you were to ask, you know, no doubt a lot of journalists that have been reporting on this issue, on both sides of the argument, if you were to ask pro-Europe politicians and journalists and pro-Leave Europe politicians and journalists, I think they'd all agree with that statement from Mr. Armstrong. They'd all think, what have we gotten ourselves into? What have we gotten ourselves into? What a mess. What a debacle this is. Given a choice, even many Europhiles, these are people who want Britain to be a part of the European Union, I think if they were given a choice, they would go back in time and rethink Britain's relationship with the EU. They're Europhiles, so they would want Britain to be a part of the EU. But after 41 years, I think they'd do some things differently. I don't think there'd be too many people that would do it the same way as it's been done. That's because Britain's membership in the EU for the past 41 years, and never more so, Britain's membership in the EU has just been painful, troublesome, frustrating, expensive, exasperating. Britain's relationship with the EU has never been overwhelmingly positive or easygoing, or there's never been a strong spirit of unity. You know, how often on this subject have you seen news reports about Prime Minister Cameron or Gordon Brown or Tony Blair or Margaret Thatcher or John Major? How often do we see news reports about of British prime ministers sitting down with their European counterparts in the EU and just agreeing on everything and slapping one another's back, and they're all on the same page and they all have the same vision for the EU? It's never happened. There's never been this warm, friendly collaboration of minds and ambitions between Britain and the EU. Pretty much every deal since 1973, pretty much every deal, every agreement, every summit, and especially in the past few years, every agreement, every deal, every summit has just been this tense affair. Every summit has just been laden with arguments and accusations and frustrations. Even when Britain has gone over there with a Europhile leader, it hasn't been easy. There's always just been conflict and tension and frustration between Britain and the European Union. And I think there are many British politicians and definitely British people who would look back on Britain's entrance into the European Union and they would consider it a mistake. They would consider it a mistake. And even a lot of Europhiles, while they may believe and they may want for Britain to be a part of the European Union, they would do things differently. They'd realize that this wasn't the best way to go about it. The moment has arrived. Just as Mr. Armstrong said it would, the moment has arrived when Britain is looking back on its entrance into the EU and it's thinking, what were we thinking? It's looking back. There are a lot of people now here in Britain. They're looking back on January 1st, 1973, and they're thinking this was a tragic mistake. The ominous potentialities that Mr. Armstrong warned about are now actual realities. That forecast by Mr. Armstrong, delivered almost 50 years ago, 41 years ago, that forecast is now a reality. It's a reality today, on this day, right now. It's a reality as Prime Minister Cameron sits down and he sits across the table from Donald Tusk and these other EU leaders, and he just tries to batter out a deal so that Britain can remain in Europe. It's just remarkable that prophecy has been fulfilled so precisely and really very dramatically. Well, I can update you on what's happening today specifically and just what this conversation or this issue is all about here in Britain. But as I mentioned, David Cameron, Britain's Prime Minister, is in Brussels right now. He went over yesterday and he's negotiating a deal with the EU that will make Britain's membership in the EU more agreeable to the British public. As you know, here in the UK, especially in the past maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years, a strong anti-EU movement has developed, particularly after the imposition of the Lisbon Treaty in 2010, I think that was. Probably the most prominent face of this movement is Nigel Farage. No doubt you've seen Mr. Farage on the news and on YouTube. But this anti-EU movement, they're concerned about the EU's reach into Britain. The Eurosceptics are concerned that the European Union is impinging on Britain's sovereignty. They're concerned that the EU is making laws and policies that hurt Britain's economy and its culture and its society. They're concerned that Britain is giving far more to the EU than it's receiving. And this Eurosceptic movement here in Britain has been getting stronger and stronger over the past few years. And it believes that Europe should leave the European Union, or in the very least, that it needs to renegotiate the terms of its membership in the EU. Eurosceptics, there are some who don't want Britain to leave the European Union necessarily, but they just want Britain to redraw or rewrite its membership with the EU, to limit the amount of control the EU has over Britain, to restore British sovereignty and to protect Britain from laws and policies and decisions that are being made in Brussels. Now, Prime Minister Cameron, he leads the Conservative Party here in Britain. He wants Britain to stay in the European Union. But he realizes that the British people don't want to stay in the European Union under the current agreement between Britain and the EU. So what Prime Minister Cameron has been doing over the past few months is he has been renegotiating Britain's current membership agreement with the EU. For the past 4 or 5 months, officials in Mr. Cameron's government have just been traveling all across Europe, meeting with officials in the governments of other EU countries and saying, okay, we need to, you know, Britain needs to rewrite its agreement with the European Union. Will you get on board? Will you agree with this? Because that's the thing about the European Union. The European Union is comprised of 28 different nations. And if one nation wants to change or to alter its agreement with the European Union, then the other 27 nations have to agree with the alterations that are taking place. Some of those alterations can just be agreed with by those other countries. And in some instances, if the alterations are major, then the EU Constitution needs to be voted on again. So David Cameron has been flying his officials all over Europe, trying to convince other EU countries to get on board with his renegotiated treaty. And then this week, Prime Minister Cameron is in Brussels and the other EU leaders are there, and he has this this new agreement, and he's putting it before the EU, and he's saying, okay, will you support this? And if EU leaders support this deal, then he's going to bring that back to England, and he's going to tell the British people, I've renegotiated our agreement with the European Union. The European Union has agreed to give us more independence over this issue, and the European Union has agreed to give us more sovereignty on this issue, and we don't have to follow this EU law, and Britain has been, I've caused Europe to exempt us from this decision and this decision. And his hope is that the British people will say, well done, Mr. Cameron. We agree with you, and we would like to stay in the EU under this new agreement that you so wonderfully fixed for us. Here's Mr. Cameron speaking at a press conference in Brussels yesterday.
It should never be about losing ourselves in some sort of European superstate. That might be for others, that is not for us. And I think that hasn't been clear enough up to now. That is problem number one. Problem number two is we are a country, as I've said, that lives on its trade, its enterprise, its business, its industry. And so it's absolutely essential that Europe is open for business and that as we work in Europe, we're not adding bureaucracy and problems and lack of competitiveness to our businesses. We're taking them away and making sure that our businesses can succeed the world over. And let's be frank, up to now, yes, Europe's had some success economically, but there's also been too much bureaucracy, too much regulation, too many rules. So that's problem number two that we got to deal with.
So that was Prime Minister Cameron talking tough with European leaders, saying Britain needs to change its relationship with the EU. So what happens next? Well, sometime over the next 24 hours, Mr. Cameron is expected to return to England and announce that he has negotiated a deal with the European Union that will allow Britain to remain in the EU, but a deal that will also protect Britain's interests. And when he comes back to Britain, now, right before the program, I updated myself on how his negotiations are going. And honestly, it didn't look good for the Prime Minister. I guess some progress had been made, but there was still a lot of progress yet to be made. And there was still some opposition from various EU leaders on different parts of his agreement. But if Prime Minister Cameron returns this evening or tomorrow morning with this deal, he will hold a cabinet meeting and he'll present the new agreement to his cabinet, and he'll give them an opportunity to give their opinions. And then over the next few months, Mr. Cameron and his government will explain his new deal to the British people. He'll take the deal and he'll show the British public how this new deal protects Britain's interests, how it limits the EU's reach into the United Kingdom, how it protects British sovereignty. And he'll try convince the British public on the merits of remaining an EU member. Meanwhile, the Eurosceptics will continue to make their case for leaving the EU. Nigel Farage and the other Eurosceptic groups will no doubt scrutinize Prime Minister Cameron's deal. They'll highlight all of its shortcomings. And from what I've read, it really is a pretty hollow deal. Mr. Cameron hasn't won major concessions from the EU. There's a few token concessions here and there, but the deal isn't convincing. So the Eurosceptics will say, well, Mr. Cameron's deal is worthless. It means nothing. And we need to go ahead and vote to leave the EU. And then after 3 or 4 months where the Europhiles and the Eurosceptics try to convince the British public on the merits of what they believe, on June 23rd, or at the end of June, the British public will go to the polls and they'll vote on whether Britain should remain in the European Union or whether it should leave. And Mr. Cameron has said that if Britain votes to leave the EU, then he'll leave the EU. So it really is. I mean, that's what's at stake here. Sometimes with issues like this, sometimes they can go on for months and months and months and months, that it can be easy for it all to turn into white noise. We can kind of just begin to tune out what the politicians say and what the journalists say, because it just goes on and on and on. But by summer, we should have a very good idea of whether Britain wants to remain a member of the European Union. Now, this issue, should Britain be a part of the EU, it's no small issue. This is an issue with major ramifications, major consequences. And if Britain left the European Union, and that is increasingly, that looks to be increasingly, it looks like that is about to happen. If that did happen, it would be a huge earthquake, geopolitical earthquake, with massive implications for Britain and for Britain's place in the world, with massive implications for the European Union, with massive implications even for the United States of America. Britain leaving the EU would really transform the geopolitical landscape of the world. And today's summit is really critical. If EU leaders give David Cameron a good deal, then he might be able to sell that to the British people and encourage them or move them to vote to keep Britain in the EU. But if EU leaders give Mr. Cameron a weak deal, a weak agreement, then he's going to have a really difficult time convincing Britain, convincing the public to remain in the EU. This really is an important summit. Here's what Donald Tusk, the president of the European Council, here's what he said yesterday concerning the summit that's unfolding right now.
I will not make a long statement today. As you know, we are in the middle of still very difficult and sensitive negotiations on the UK question. One thing is clear to me, though. This is a make or break summit, I have no doubt. Thank you for your understanding. We'll meet later in the evening. And thank you.
This is a make or break summit. That's what Mr. Tusk said. This is a make or break summit. If Mr. Cameron can get that agreement from the EU with enough significant changes to the Britain's agreement to be in the EU, then he might be able to convince the British public to stay in the European Union. But if he doesn't get those concessions, and just reading the news, it doesn't look like he's going to get the meaningful concessions that he needs. If he doesn't get those concessions, then there's a very good chance that Britain will vote to leave the European Union. If Mr. Cameron returns to England tonight or tomorrow morning with little more than a few token concessions, and as I said, it looks like that's going to be the case, then this is going to benefit the Eurosceptic movement. And it will quite possibly push Britain much closer to leaving the EU. And it is it's a close race. If this referendum were held today, it's impossible to predict how the British people would vote because it's that close. Some polls put the Let's Leave Europe group in the lead. Other polls put the Let's Stay Europe. There was one poll that I saw just before I came into the studio that did indicate movement in the direction of the Eurosceptic movement. That for this poll showed that the Eurosceptic movement, or the movement to leave the EU, was actually winning quite significantly, at least by a few percent. So that's a bit of a breakthrough, and obviously the pundits are wondering, well, is there a new trend emerging here? Is the Eurosceptic movement really starting to gain some momentum? But again, there's an enormous amount at stake here. We're going to take a break, but after the break, I'd like to explore some possible consequences, both for Britain and for the European Union, of Britain leaving the European Union.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The very best minds in the world are in total ignorance of the unprecedented cataclysm that is about to strike. And why have these prophecies not been understood or believed? Because the vital key that unlocks prophecy to our understanding had been lost. That key is the identity of the United States and the British peoples in biblical prophecy. That key has been found. It is presented to those whose unprejudiced eyes are willing to see in this volume, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. The events prophesied to strike the American and British peoples in the next few years are sure. These colossal world events shrinking the first two world wars into insignificance will come, but not until the warning has been made available for those whose eyes are willing to see. Request The United States and Britain in Prophecy today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
Welcome back. I'm Brad McDonald, and I'm taking the program today for Stephen Flurry. And we're discussing the subject of Britain's place, Britain's membership in the European Union. That decision, or the future of Britain in the European Union, may well be decided over the next few months. And events in Brussels today could have a huge and decisive impact on whether Britain will remain in the European Union. Now, before I get into this next section, I just wanted to play a short audio clip from Nigel Farage. No doubt you've heard his name before. He's a powerful and eloquent speaker. He's probably the leader of the Eurosceptic movement here in the UK. And he really just goes around the country holding town hall meetings and pub meetings. he's known for going into a pub and buying a pint and waxing eloquent about why Britain should leave the European Union. But here's Nigel Farage on what he expects Britain to do after it leaves the European Union.
What we'd be doing is getting out of political union with Europe and rejoining the world. You know, at the moment, it's incredible, really. We're the fifth or sixth biggest economy in the world, depending what measure you use. Mm. And we're actually banned from making our own trade deals with any other part of the world. I want us to have a simple free trade agreement with the European Union, not to be a member of a political club, not to be subject to the decision of its courts,
Would you want access to the single market?
I would want access to the single market, just as China does and every other country in the world does. But I don't want to be a member of the single market, and here's why. Only 15% of the British economy is exporting goods to the European Union, yet the regulations of that market affect 100% of the British economy. Now, I think, freed from political union, we'll go on buying, selling goods with each other, that's fine, but we'll be free to make our own trade deals and to look at the mass of European law which falls on our small and medium-sized businesses and to say, do you know what, with a bit of lightening up, actually, economically, we'd be far better off outside it than in.
That was Nigel Farage just explaining his position on Britain leaving Europe. And he really makes some excellent points in there. He invokes some good facts and statistics. Now, with all of these things, I could play you a clip of a Europhile of someone who wants to stay in Europe. And they could, they could make a persuasive case too. But you notice there that Mr. Farage, he breezes through his explanation of what Britain or his explanation of Britain's relationship with the EU if it leaves. He says, well, if Britain left the European Union, we would just continue trading with Europe. We'd continue selling our goods and services. We'd be in a great position. We'd be in a stronger position, he says. And you know, maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. Mathematically, maybe he's right in theory. But what if he's not? What if he's not right? What if the European Union began to see the United Kingdom as a competitor or an opponent? Mr. Farage is saying, well, Britain could just leave Europe, the European Union, and you know, he's implying that there won't be any hard feelings. There won't be any tension. We'll just go ahead and renegotiate new treaties and new agreements with the European Union. We'll go on and things will be a lot better than they are today. And maybe he's right. You can understand the logic of his arguments in many ways. But what if he's not? Or what if it's not that simple? Again, what if the European Union began to consider or see the UK as a competitor, as an opponent. Surely that could happen, right? Surely that could happen. Right now, Britain is a member of the European Union, and other European Union members view it as one of us. Britain's part of the European family, even if it is the black sheep of the family. even if there is a lot of, you know, tension and frustration between Britain and the other European countries, Britain right now is part of the EU family. Now, if Britain leaves, what if the EU increasingly view or increasingly begins to consider the UK as a competitor? Doesn't it make sense that the EU's view of Britain would change if Britain is no longer a member of the European Union? Now, I really want the listeners to understand that I am not here on behalf of David Cameron making the case that Britain should remain in the European Union. Personally, I think joining the EU was a mistake from the beginning. Britain and Europe, they're just unequally yoked in so many ways, historically and culturally, and there's just two different systems, and it was never going to work to try bring these two together. And I think Britain could survive independent from the European Union. I do. However, I do not think it would be maybe as simple or as easy as Mr. Farage suggests. Well, you know, Britain would just go on trading with the EU. Well, what if the EU began to see Britain as an enemy? Leaving the EU might not be as smooth and as inconsequential as Mr. Farage and the Eurosceptic movement believes. Look around at the world right now. We are seeing a greater tendency in nations to defend self-interests. Conditions are unstable. There's a strong sense that crisis is looming. And we're seeing it already, where nations are building walls, literal walls, but also politically and financially. They're starting to protect themselves. Well, it only makes sense that the European Union would go on doing that. You know, would the European Union emerge as a major competitor to Britain? I think it would. And the question, again, I'm not saying that Britain needs to remain in the EU because they're going to come after us if we leave. I don't believe that. But what I'm saying is, if Britain did leave the European Union, is Britain ready to have Europe as competition? Is Britain ready for the EU to be an opponent? Is Britain ready for when Germany or France or the Brussels sets its sight to come after Britain? I don't know. I don't think it is. I haven't heard anyone talk about it from that perspective. One area where the European Union could come after Britain and really have an immediate and significant negative impact on the United Kingdom is in or surrounds the city of London. London, as you know, is the world's greatest financial center. And the financial services that London is home to are vital to Britain's economy. More than one-tenth of the government's income here in the UK comes from taxes on the financial center. It's just about the only industry in Britain which sells more to the rest of the world than it imports. And Britain is uniquely dependent on its financed industry, more so than any other country in the world. No other nation on earth depends on its finance industry quite like Britain. I forget the statistics, but it's something, it's just ridiculous how much of London and all of the suburbs around London really depend on London being the financial capital of the world. More than $1 trillion worth of euros change hands in London every single day. That's almost half of the total euros being traded globally each day. Now, if Britain is no longer an EU member, European officials have already suggested that they would look to reduce the amount of business and the amount of transactions that are taking place in the City of London. European leaders have already said that if Britain leaves Europe, then it doesn't make sense for the EU, for London to be the financial capital of the EU. It only makes sense that the financial capital of the EU would be in an EU country. And a number of European leaders have said that, you know, if Britain leaves Europe, then we would be looking, we'd be trying to create a new financial capital for the European Union in Brussels or Frankfurt, Germany. I've read a number of articles talking about European industries and banks and politicians coming after London. See, at that point, let's say the EU establishes Frankfurt as the financial capital of the European Union. Frankfurt is already a major finance city globally. But all of a sudden, we have the City of London has a competitor. What if the EU begins to compete with London for the world's finances? This would have a massive impact on Britain's economy. Now, again, I'm not saying that this is a reason that Britain needs to stay in the EU. My point is, well, if Britain leaves the EU, is it ready for tensions to heat up with the European Union? Is it ready for the European Union to maybe come after it in some of these ways? Is Britain ready for that? I don't think it is. I don't think the Eurosceptic movement is ready for that. Just this week, HSBC said that it would move up to 5,000 banking sector employees from London to Paris if Britain left Europe. Goldman Sachs said that it would relocate entire sections of its business from London to Europe. Again, that's not reason for Britain to stay in the European Union necessarily. But is Britain ready to fight? Does Britain have the resolve and the determination and the plan and the leadership and the ambition to hold on to those things? Or will it just kind of be caught off guard by this new, more aggressive, more ambitious, more competitive European Union? I've heard one journalist over here ask the question, where if Britain leaves the European Union, what happens if France stops all efforts at policing the border between France and England? I mean, they're not doing a great job right now policing the border. But what happens if France becomes a little bit more of an opponent, a little bit more competitive with Britain in its foreign policy? What happens if the EU begins to view Britain more as the enemy? Now, in today's world where it's so globalized and there's just constant summits and meetings and gatherings and photo ops and, here in the West, we don't talk about competition, at least not competition between Western powers. You know, we think we're beyond that. We're more sophisticated now in our politics. We're more collaborative in our politics. Well, is that really the case? If you go back and look at European history, it is a history of Britain, France, Germany, Spain competing. France and Britain competing, and then France and Britain aligning with one another. Both have happened. What happens if that situation reemerges? Is Britain prepared for the EU as an opponent? What happens if Germany or the EU decide to come after Britain? I don't think Britain's ready for that. And I'm not even sure they've thought too much about it. Think too about what could happen if the European Union to the European Union if Britain leaves. The European Union was created after World War II. I think it was at that time it was called the European Coal and Steel Community. Is that right, Sam? Sam is 100 times smarter than me, and he just little factoids like that in his brain and they never get out. He's shaking his head that I'm right, so I must be right. The European Union started off as the European Coal and Steel Community, and a big part of the reason for the creation of the European Community was so that Europe could have a community of nations, or it could be a community of nations, and if it started off with four or five nations, but in a community of nations with, you know, equal powers, then it would be almost impossible for one nation to emerge more powerful than the others and take over Europe. Britain, together with France and Germany, ever since have been the top three most powerful nations in Europe. And Britain in particular has played a really important role of just keeping in check some of the ambitions of other European Union nations, France and Germany in particular. Britain's membership in the European Union gave it significant influence over certain decisions and in the shaping of different policies and procedures. Being in a member of the European Union at least allowed Britain to monitor what was going on, to listen in on the discussions, to give input, as I said, to shape decisions. Another important role that Britain has played in the European Union is that it's been a gigantic millstone around the neck of the European Union. From the moment Britain entered the European Community, it has been a burden to the unification process. Here's a quote from the Financial Times in 2007. There is little doubt that the rest of Europe could have advanced with European integration much further in the absence of the United Kingdom. See, Brussels, European Union, on so many occasions, European Union officials would want to enforce a policy, enforce a new law, a new legislation, and Britain would come along and say, no, we're not going to do that. No, we're not going to do that. Now, Brussels and the unelected officials in Brussels, they have had tremendous success creating all kinds of laws that impose on the sovereignty of EU member states. But if Britain wasn't there to slow down that process, it'd be 100 times worse than it is today. Britain has been this millstone around the neck of the European Union, slowing things down. But with Britain cut loose, European nations will have less weight holding them back from making progress. There'd be one less voice that they need to consider. There'd be one less voice that would be dissenting. It's interesting. Throughout its history in the European Union, Britain has been the defender of the underdog, let's call it, in the European Union. France and Germany, and the past 10, 15 years, it's Germany. Whenever France and Germany would make a decision or make a policy or bring a new idea out, or mainly whenever the politicians in Brussels will come up with a new deal, a new proposal, a new policy, a new law that hurt the interests of maybe some more marginal European Union countries, some of the smaller countries, let's say in Eastern Europe. Oftentimes, Britain would come along, and Britain was one of the top three. It would come along, and it would defend the interests of some of those marginal European Union countries. And it would either, you know, veto the policy, or it would slow it down. Well, what happens to some of those smaller European Union countries when their big brother, when Britain, who's been at the vanguard of defending their interests, leaves? They'll be left on their own, and their voice, without Britain there to amplify it, without British officials there to go before Brussels and make their case and defend their interests, the likes of Estonia and Latvia and Lithuania and Poland and Portugal, some of the they're not going to have that support, that vital support, and they'll probably be increasingly bulldozed by Brussels. They'll be steamrolled more and more. You see, Britain historically has played the role of middleman in Europe. I'll just read a couple of quotes talking about Britain's role as the arbiter of Europe. The Latin maxim, "He whom I support will prevail," is attributed to Henry VIII and was said to have applied to Britain's role in Europe. I'm reading from a Trumpet article here. William Camden shaded it differently when he said that Britain was the tongue in the balance of power of Europe. The point being, for about 500 years, Britain has been the pivot on which the balance of power on the continent has swung. When Louis XIV made his play for the Spanish Netherlands in 1701, it was Britain's decision to join the side of the Dutch and the Austrians that put an end to the War of Spanish Succession. 100 years later, Britain was the deciding factor in the defeat of Napoleon Bonaparte. During World Wars I and II, Britain's decision to throw its weight behind France and the Low Countries altered the course of the conflict. See, Britain would intervene and come down on it was the balance of power. It held the balance of power in Europe. For five centuries, Britain was seen by the English as well as many of the continental powers as the arbiter of Europe, the illustrious island power responsible for checking the ambition of Europe's larger nations and preserving the balance of power on the continent. Winston Churchill talked about this role in a speech before the Conservative Members Committee on Foreign Affairs in 1936. As the arbiter of Europe, he said, Britain has preserved, quote, preserved the liberties of Europe, protected the growth of its vivacious and varied society, and emerged after four terrible struggles with an ever-growing fame and widening empire. Here's what he said. Acting as the pivot of power in Europe has been the, quote, unconscious tradition of British foreign policy. It's really just an insightful quote. Britain historically, and even within the European Union over the past 41 years, has been able to be the arbiter. It's been able to keep in check to a certain extent, not perfectly, but keep in check the ambitions of Brussels and EU officials, and keep in check German ambitions, much less so the past 10 or 15 years. Britain hasn't been doing a great job of this more recently. But again, what happens when Britain leaves the European Union? Will Germany be able, without Britain there to check it, Germany will be able to move a lot quicker. Brussels will be able to move a lot quicker. The interests of some of the smaller states it'll be easier for these big behemoths to steamroll those countries without Britain to help defend them. Again, this is not an argument for Britain staying in the European Union. I think if Britain had the right foreign policy, it would be possible to continue playing the role of arbiter outside the European Union. That's possible. But I don't think it's likely. I don't think Britain's leaders on the conservative side, and certainly not among the Labour leadership, they don't have an interest in playing that role. They don't have much of an interest in keeping in check France or Germany or Brussels. And again, has anyone thought about, well, what if the European Union comes after us? Is Britain ready for that? I don't think they are. And I don't think they're even anticipating it. As the prophet Hosea says, Britain is behaving as a silly dove. A silly dove. Not because it wants to leave the European Union, but it's behaving as a silly dove because it's underestimating human nature. It's underestimating the potential for European countries and the European Union to emerge as a competitor and as an opponent of Britain. Let me just conclude with a quote. This is from Mr. Armstrong. Now, this is from 1956. 1956, Mr. Armstrong wrote, "The stage is all set. All that's lacking now is the strong leader. Germany is the economic and military heart of Europe. Probably Germany will lead and dominate the coming United States of Europe. But Britain will be no part of it." What a prescient quote. That could apply just as much today as it did in 1956, even more. "All that's lacking now is a strong leader. Germany is the economic and military heart of Europe. Britain will be no part of it." That's Mr. Herbert Armstrong in 1956. In 1973, what's that, 16 years later, Britain joined the European community. And it looked like Mr. Armstrong was wrong. I'm sure there were some people around at the time that said, "Well, Mr. Armstrong said in 1956 that Britain would never be a part of the European community. And here he is. Here's Britain joining the European community." Well, here we are in 2016, and Britain is on the verge of leaving Europe. Now, the details of how that happens, whether it happens as a result of the summit in Brussels today and the referendum coming up in June, or whether it happens, you know, after that sometimes, maybe Britain will be thrown out. The details of how that happens, we don't know. But if you're reading on this subject and reading about this subject, there's no going back on the words that have been said between Britain and Europe. The relationship is not going to improve. It's only going to get worse. And it is inevitable that these two, Britain and the European Union, will part ways. And I just want to conclude with that quote from Mr. Armstrong from March 1973. Incredible quote. "Britain is going to look back on Monday, January 1st, 1973, as a most tragically historic date, a date fraught with ominous potentialities, for that date marked the United Kingdom's entry into the European community." That quote is written all over events unfolding here in Britain and in Brussels today. Again, as I said at the start, if you were to ask Prime Minister Cameron about his views on the European Union, if it was just you and him and he was going to open up and share his heart with you, I think he'd put his head in his hands, and he'd just sigh and he'd say, "Oh, it's a nightmare." It's a nightmare. Just as Mr. Armstrong predicted. And you can be sure, again, just as Mr. Armstrong prophesied and as the Bible indicates, you can be sure that Britain will leave the European Union. Great to be with you. Have a fantastic weekend, and I hopefully will see you again soon.